You are listening to Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast, episode number 12. Today, we're talking about metabolism and menses, hormones, the science behind easy and sustainable fat loss. Hey everyone, Astrid here. Welcome to Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast is produced twice a month for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at www.healyounaturally.com/podcasts. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitches, Google Play, Alexa Play, and all major podcast directories. You can also follow me on Twitter at @heal_naturally and on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at @healyounaturally. All links are in the show notes on the website. Now let's get into the show. Hey everyone, today a special guest is someone I followed, admire, respect, and have learned so much from throughout the years. I wanted to interview him for a long, long time, and finally I have the honor. Today's phenomenal guest is Dr. Jay Tita. Dr. Tita is an integrative physician, author, and sought-after expert in the realm of metabolism and self-development. He spent the last 25 years immersed in the study of strength and conditioning, hormonal metabolism, and the psychology of change and success. He's the founder and creator of the international health and fitness company Metabolic Effect and the author of several books, including the bestseller Metabolic Effect Diet and Metabolic Aftershock. He has also contributed both the exercise and sports nutrition chapters to the textbook of natural medicine. His new company, Jay Tita LLC, combines his medical and fitness knowledge with his expertise in self-development and mindset change. He has recently released two new books available on Amazon, Next Level Tribe and Human 365. Welcome, Jay, to today's podcast.
Hey, Astrid. Nice to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. It's great to have you. Okay, guys. So without further ado, we're just going to go jump right in. Jade, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey as a physician, author, and educator?
Yeah, well, you know, it's been a long journey. I started out, a lot of people laugh at this, but I started out at 15 years old, personal training. And I know that sounds weird, but I was writing programs for the guys on my football team and their family members. And that's kind of where it started for me. And I just loved that sort of way of interacting with people, and health and fitness became a bug. From there, I got very much into nutrition. I was all about, you know, sort of being the best football player I could be, and really was into that. And that led me into strength and conditioning and bodybuilding, which then led me into nutrition interest, which then led me into a degree in biochemistry in my undergrad training. And then things kind of got a little bit dicey there for a little while. I was on my way to go to medical school. And I took a look at the curriculum of the traditional medical schools and just hated what I saw, because there was no classes in nutrition and no classes in exercise. And I kind of had an existential crisis around that time. Mm-hmm. But I found a school that trained primary care physicians in alternative and complementary medicine, a school called Bastyr University. And at the time, that was kind of considered, the best way to describe it is like witchcraft medicine. None of my family members, none of my peers, none of my friends really knew what that was. And it was sort of a big risk. I had no idea at the time. This is back in the late 90s. I had no idea at the time that this was going to be a huge field and that everyone would be interested in alternative and complementary medicine. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of a stroke of luck, I suppose. But when I got out of naturopathic medical school, I had sort of another crisis, because what I saw was that in the alternative health world, there's a lot of, I don't even know how to say this, Astrid, I guess I'll say it, that there's a lot of stuff that's just made up, not very evidence-based. And I was sort of a science guy. And mm-hmm. So I kind of swung back to the middle and, really started focusing on really evidence-based natural medicine, and started to incorporate more of the conventional medicine as well. which kind of leads me to where I am today and where everyone listening kind of meets me. I'm sort of this mix of conventional medical doctor, integrative sort of alternative, you know, naturopathic physician, as well as 25 mm-hmm. years in the personal training realm and a specialty in endocrinology and hormones. And then certainly I have an interest in psychology and philosophy. And so all of that sort of mixes up into a blender. And I guess the best way to describe me now is a hybrid fitness professional who really focuses on hormonal metabolism mainly. That's kind of where I've got a lot of my notoriety in that realm, and just teaching people about how the metabolism really works, you know, how we can manage hormones and calories and what it really takes for body change. And I think that's, you know, ultimately what most people know me as. But of course, I write and lecture in a lot of different areas now, specifically personal development, metabolism, strength and conditioning, and weight loss. So big, long diatribe, but hopefully that gives everyone an idea of who they're talking to. I'm kind of a fitness and natural medicine and, you know, personal development eclectic, if you will.
Absolutely. Now, I have to mention that you are one of the pioneers, and I started following you like years ago. I'm thinking like five, seven years ago on Facebook. And that's how I started learning everything about hormones and the impact they have in overall health and how they are, you know, intertwined with basically every area in our body and in mind. So it is, it's definitely something that my listeners are going to be interested in. So tying it up to the second question is, we're going to talk about metabolism and menses. What is the difference between men and women metabolically, and why do they have to eat, train differently? This is based on one of your amazing posts on Instagram.
Well, the first you have to kind of understand what is metabolism. Most people misunderstand metabolism, but the best way to think of it, the simplest way to think about it, is not as a calculator or a chemistry set, but more like a stress barometer. Essentially, what our metabolism, both male and female metabolism, does is prepare us to deal with stress. It is essentially looking out into the outside world, making sort of determinations about the food we're eating, light, temperature, emotional responses, all of this kind of stuff, and then translating that information that is gathering from the outside world to our cells inside of our body. And it does this mainly through hormones, but the whole job of the metabolism is to keep us in balance. And so it is one big stress barometer. And one important point that everyone listening to this needs to understand is that the major stress that our metabolism encountered throughout its history was a starvation stress. In other words, food was not guaranteed. And so we grew up, so to speak, in a feast and famine reality. And so anytime we encounter stress today, whether it be too much food or too little food, mm-hmm. whether it be too much exercise or too little exercise, whether it be emotional stress, a deadline at work, an argument with your significant other, being stuck in traffic, you name it, whenever we have that stress or any stress, one of the responses is going to be a starvation-like response, which is why things like emotional turmoil can impact hunger. It's why things like romantic upset can impact cravings. It's why getting stressed out or fearful can shut off hunger at times. In other words, our stress response really impacts our starvation response, the main ones being sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings. I use a fancy acronym for this, or you could call it a fancy acronym or a silly acronym, but S-H-M-E-C, SHMEC. SHMEC is sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings, and SHMEC is an indication of how stressed out your metabolism is. So your question was, what is the difference between male and female metabolism? Well, if you understand that the metabolism is a stress barometer, and you understand what I just told you, then the next thing to understand is that female is the gender of childbearing, obviously. And so women have to have a little bit more of a sensitive stress barometer to look out there into the world and say, is it safe? Is there enough food? Can I have a baby and bring that baby to term and support that baby once that baby's around? And so women are slightly more stress sensitive in their metabolic responses, which is why they can sometimes respond less favorably to things like fasting or low calorie diets or keto diets and things like that. That's the first thing that's different about women. The other thing that goes along with that is this natural cyclical hormonal response of women. So if you understand that women, the female metabolism is sort of trying to prepare a woman to have and support a baby, then you'll understand what the menstrual cycle is essentially doing. So right at menses, for the next 2 weeks up to ovulation, the metabolism is trying to strengthen the woman. And this is a very estrogen dominant time. You can kind of think of estrogen as the female testosterone. It's sort of like a weaker version of testosterone, but I would oftentimes say it's a more potent hormone than testosterone because yes, it helps women burn a little bit of fat. Yes, it helps women gain some muscle, but it also helps stabilize the female brain, stabilizes mood, helps stabilize sleep, balances out hunger responses. In other words, that Schmeck response, estrogen keeps Schmeck in greater check. What's really interesting about estrogen is you can kind of think of it as building the female body up, preparing it for a baby. Now, mm-hmm. once ovulation occurs, estrogen is sort of superseded by progesterone. And progesterone basically is there to kind of thin things out a little bit, to refine the metabolism a little bit, to shift resources from the woman to the baby. So all of a sudden, the female starts to become more insulin resistant. This is a good thing for the baby because what it means is the female body is getting less of the food and diverting more of those resources to the baby. And it also is a very anxiolytic hormone and helps the body fight against cortisol. And so this is the natural sort of female response. And when you understand this, you understand that working with the menstrual cycle perhaps has a benefit for the female hormone. And unfortunately, women are typically being told to do the exact same thing as men, which isn't a bad thing, by the way. They'll certainly get results from that. And men and women have, you know, share a lot of their metabolism. So it's not that women shouldn't be training and eating like men. It's just that women may benefit from being a little bit more in touch with this natural hormonal cycle and rhythm that they go through both month to month and in different stages of their lives. And most women are not aware of these potential benefits. So I know that's, again, a big, long diatribe. I apologize if it's too much biochemistry and hormones, but the mm-hmm. take home here is that women, the metabolism is a stress barometer. Women have a more sensitive stress barometer because they must basically be the gender of childbearing. And they also have this natural cyclical hormonal response that helps them prepare to have a baby and then support that baby if that egg is fertilized and then help bring that baby to term and support that baby. And so once you understand that, you understand a little bit more about what we can talk about in terms of what women should be doing to work with these hormonal rhythms.
Wow. That is all fascinating. And I just have to mention that I learned it all makes sense. And I learned about all of this and actually through you, you know, it was the first time I heard of, you know, how to exercise during menses or, you know, have a little bit of a different approach to the type of exercise that you are including routine and also diet and all that. So it is fascinating. I love it. So that's actually, I don't know if you kind of like answered this question. And so I wanted to talk about the kind of exercise during menses, like why should women exercise differently during their cycle?
Yeah. Well, there's two different ways to look at this, right? One way is to look at it strictly from the estrogen point of view. And I think that's the easiest way to do it. So we'll sort of cover that first. Think about it like this. Estrogen is an insulin sensitizing hormone, and it also blocks the stress hormone. So it makes women a little bit more able to handle extra calories and extra carbohydrates without getting overly fat. And so when you overeat, typically you'll gain some fat, maybe you'll gain some muscle. With estrogen around, you're able to maybe take calorie surplus and store a little bit of extra muscle with it and a little bit less fat. In other words, during these estrogen dominant times, which would be basically from menses to ovulation, women can handle more stress and more food. That means that they can more likely train like an athlete, eating more and exercising more. So this is a very good time for women to put out a lot of energy, to do lifting weights, to do intervals, to do cardio, to pretty much do anything they want exercise-wise, and also to raise their calories up a little bit. One interesting thing that every woman should know, and actually every man should know as well, is that the eat less, exercise more approach that most people want to follow is really not the best way to go about getting the bodies that we want. Think about it this way. Most people, if they look out there in the world and they look and say, I want to look like these particular people. The people they're normally talking about are athletes. They want to look like athletes. They want to be muscular in tone and also lean. That is the look of an athlete. The interesting thing is no athlete in her right mind eats less and exercises more. Any woman who would do that would not be very good at her sport. What she does is she eats more and she exercises more. And this is a great time during that estrogen dominant time, the first part of the menstrual cycle, for her to be doing that. And so during this time, the first half of the menstrual cycle, eating more and exercising more is a great thing for people to do. And then, of course, once that ovulatory shift happens, and by the way, not every woman knows when ovulation happens, so I'll tell you how to kind of get around this in just a minute. But if you do understand when ovulation happens, oftentimes you'll get vaginal mucosal changes. You'll also get what is called middle schmerz, which is a pain, or a tickling or a sensation down near the ovaries. This typically will tell women when they switch into ovulation and when they're beginning to have ovulation. Once that happens, it's a really good time for women to move from an eat more, exercise more state to an eat less, exercise less state. This is a time for women to be more attentive to having less food, less calories, less carbohydrates, that kind of thing, and pay attention to a little bit more stress management. So I would call this eat less, exercise less. This is a very good time to become a little bit more woo-saw and focus on relaxation things like spa therapies and massage and meditation and leisurely or leisurely walking versus high-intensity interval training and heavy weight training. So this is one way to look at this, and it sort of can work very nice with the female cycle. Now, one of the things, and I'll stop here in just a minute, but one of the things a lot of women will say to me is they'll say, well, Jade, the last thing I really want to do during and near my menstrual cycle, the week of and the week after, is be eating less and exercising less. I tend to want to eat more at that time. And if I'm not careful, I'll get myself into an eat more, exercise less state. So there's another way to approach this. I just gave you the first way, and I think that is the best way. So any of you women who are listening to this and say, that makes sense to me and I can do that, then I think you should do that approach. But the other way that this can be done is to just look at when estrogen is its highest. So the first part I told you about estrogen and progesterone, relatively speaking, but estrogen is actually the highest the week before and after ovulation, and the lowest, relatively speaking, the week before and after menses. And so another way to do this is to eat more and exercise more the week before and after ovulation, and to eat less and exercise less the week before and after menses. And so I'm sorry to be confusing, but there's two different ways that you can do this. And I'll repeat them one more time just so everyone listening can get them. The first way is taking advantage of the relative ratio of estrogen to progesterone. This means eat more and exercise more the first half of the menstrual cycle from menses to ovulation, and eat less and exercise less the second half of the menstrual cycle, ovulation to menses. That's the first approach to do this. And if you don't know when you ovulate, by the way, you can just use menses. At menses, what you're going to do is for 2 weeks, eat more and exercise more, and then switch into an eat less, exercise less state until menses occurs again. That can be anywhere from 10 to 21 days for most women. And so it just works really well that way. The second way to do this is to the week before menses while you're having PMS and the week during menses, eat less and exercise less. Just take it really easy, relax, woo-sah, less calories, more walking, less heavy training. And then the week after menses, for the next 2 weeks, eat more and exercise more like an athlete. Both of these things work really, really well, either way to cycle your approach. And by the way, one of the things to understand is that the metabolism loves a changeable, cyclical approach to diet and exercise. What it does not like is a standard approach done over and over again. And that's because it's an adaptive, reactive system. And you cannot use a program that is unchangeable in a system that is changeable. When you're dealing with the metabolism and you have a changeable system, you want to also use a changeable approach. And that's why this works so well. And of course, we could talk about what happens when women are on hormone replacement therapy or, you know, menopause, because things shift a little bit. But this is a really nice way to think about this.
Wow. Amazing. I actually, based on one of your posts, started doing it and, you know, like paying attention to, you know, eat less, exercise less before and after. I was kind of confused, to be honest. So I'm so glad that you broke it down. Now you guys are listening, definitely take notes. And this is fantastic, you know, because for those of us, for example, I wasn't seeing results and I realized that I was working out like 4 or 5 times a week. And, you know, just going all out, literally like 2 hours. I would go into the sauna, then doing cardio, doing circuit training, you know, weight training. And it was just like so much stress in the body, even during my menses. Like I was just going all out because I was like, all right, you know, I need to. I had a disc herniation injury for a while and I wasn't able to do much. But since I started feeling better, I was like, all right, now I could go all out. But then as I started, you know, reading some of your posts and learning about, you know, what type of exercises when also very important with nutrition. And that's a whole other, you know, topic with nutrition, right? In terms of like eat and also what you mentioned before, what's being said, calories in, calories out. That, guys, I learned from Dr. Tita years ago, and that's not is no longer an approach, correct? That like eat less and exercise more on a regular basis. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, the way to think about this, because I know this gets confusing, especially for women who are hearing this for the first time. But the best way to think about it is if you understand that the metabolism is a stress barometer and that it's built on change, that it's adaptive and reactive. You'll understand that the eat less, exercise more approach, there's nothing wrong with that approach, except that everyone is doing it all of the time, day in and day out, week in and week out, month in and month out, and year in and year out. So again, it's not that eat less, exercise more is wrong per se. It's that you're trying to use the same approach over and over and over again in a system that is built to adapt. And so about 2 weeks after you start an eat less, exercise more approach, your system adapts. And you know it adapts because what happens to SHMEC, sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings? What happens after about 2 weeks of any eat less, exercise more approach? SHMEC goes out of check, which means you know your system is under stress. And so this new method that I've been teaching people, and people have been getting fantastic results for years off this, is simply its power is simply in the changeability of this. And so you can imagine that you can easily go back and forth and slightly tweak your approach. When you're exercising a lot, just eat a lot. When you're eating less, exercise less. It's very easy to do it this way versus eating less and exercising more continuously. So what I don't mean to say is that calories in, calories out, definitely matter, but hormones matter as well. Calories in, calories out definitely is important. But if you only look at it from that point of view, you can easily throw off sleep, hunger, mood, and energy and cravings, making any diet that you attempt non-sustainable. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm teaching is to adjust and vary your approach so that Schmeck stays in check, so that you're working with your hormonal cycle, and so that you can make the changes sustainable. So yes, in these approaches, you can achieve a calorie deficit with eat less, exercise less. And you can achieve a calorie deficit with eat more, exercise more. With eat less, exercise less, that calorie deficit is coming mainly from food, decreased intake. With eat more, exercise more, that calorie deficit is coming mainly from exercise, increased output. And because you're more closely matching food and exercise, you're having less of a stress response. That's really all this is. It's not to say, oh, everything you've ever heard is wrong. It's just to refine things a little bit so we can do things a little bit better, be a little bit more accurate in the way that our metabolism actually works. So what I'm saying is move away from a constant eat less, exercise more approach and start cycling between eat less, exercise less, and eat more, exercise more. What's beautiful about that, by the way, is after a few months of doing that, eat less, exercise more will start working again. And when you do it, and you can on occasion, it will become beneficial once again and actually work once again. You just don't really want to do it for too long. And by the way, when would be the best time to do eat less, exercise more? Think about it. This calorie gap of intake and output gets a little bit wider. That's a little bit more stressful for the system. Estrogen is probably the best hormone to balance against that. So eat more and exercise more are best done during estrogen dominant and high estrogen states. That would be pretty much from menses all the way up to the week before menses again. So you have a 3-week time there where estrogen is either relatively speaking higher or absolutely speaking higher. And so you wouldn't want to go past that. So that's just basically to say that there's nothing wrong with the eat less, exercise more approach, except that most women have been doing it and only it because they don't know any better.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, that is true. You know, a lot of people, including myself, you know, it's always good to educate, you know, yourself and try to change things up. And, you know, if you want to see results, you got to make changes. So that totally makes sense. One of the things I thought was, I saw one of your posts, easy fat loss, you know, for a lot of us, that's like that phrase right there is like, easy fat loss. So what are the two things you talk about that are required for easy fat loss? And I think you kind of already mentioned it, but for our listeners that don't follow you yet on Instagram or your social media channels, what are the two things that you talk about that are required for easy fat loss in a nutshell?
Yeah, well, when I say easy fat loss, I mean, I'm essentially saying sustainable fat loss. There's a difference between weight loss and fat loss, first of all. Weight loss is indiscriminate. You could be losing muscle, you could be losing fat, you could be losing water. You do not want to lose muscle if you want to maintain your metabolic potential. Fat loss means you're losing almost entirely fat and you're maintaining your muscle. Now, there's two things that are required for fat loss. You absolutely have to control calories. You must have a calorie deficit. The second thing you must have is your hormonal metabolism balanced. What do I mean by hormonal metabolism? This is sort of a pet peeve of mine, and I'll just let you into this. For some reason, when people think about hormones, they think about estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, the sex hormones, mm-hmm. or they think about insulin and cortisol and these kinds of things. And these hormones matter for sure, but the most important ones are the ones that are controlling our hunger and our energy. And these hormones are mainly things like ghrelin and CCK and PYY and neuropeptide Y and all of these incretins like GLP and GIP and GLP-1. In other words, these hunger hormones that sort of make us feel full and keep us satisfied for a long period of time, or make us crave to eat lots of foods. So when I think about hormones, you don't have to worry necessarily about all the names of these things. You don't have to go and get your hormones tested. All you have to do is know, is your schmeck in check or not? Is sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings balanced? If it is, then you know your hormonal metabolism is balanced. So that's the first thing you want to do. You want to eat and exercise in a way that keeps sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings balanced. What does that look like? Those are foods rich in protein, fiber, and water for most everyone. If you want to know what these foods are, to make it very simple, it's soups, salads, scrambles, shakes, and stir fries. Soups, salads, scrambles, shakes, and stir fries that are rich in water, rich in lean protein, and relatively low in fat and starch. And then you can add on to that, according to your individual tolerance, enough sugar, fat, starch, alcohol, etc., to make that meal enjoyable. But in general, to keep schmeck in check, to keep hormones balanced, you want to be eating 90% of your meals in the form of low carb, low fat soups, salads, scrambles, shakes, and stir fries. Once you do that, you should, for most people, be able to easily achieve a calorie deficit. Now, when I say easily achieve, what that means is not be hungry, not be craving, not be chasing your energy around and using food to control those things. In other words, when your metabolism is balanced and you're not hungry and you're not having cravings, you will naturally eat less for most, but not all people. And that will create the calorie deficit that then drives fat loss. Most people go about this the exact wrong way because they first try to lower calories. And what they do is inadvertently throw off schmeck and their hormones. And so any results they get are short-lived. I call it the metabolic credit card effect. Okay, sure, you're going to get some short-term results, but you're also going to have some steep penalties and weight regain. This is why 66% of people get fatter after going on eat less, exercise more approaches. As a matter of fact, the statistics tell us eat less, exercise more diets. No matter what those diets are, it doesn't matter if you're eating less calories, eating less carbs, anything like that is going to have a success rate of less than 5%. And a full 2/3 of those people are going to probably gain that weight back plus some. So instead of taking the old approach of just counting calories, what we want to do is take a hormones first approach, get schmeck in check, and then naturally see if that controls hunger, energy, cravings, sleep, mood, etc., so that you eat less. You know that you've got hormones balanced if schmeck is in check, and you know you're losing fat if the waist measurements and weight measurements go down. These are the things that you need to be looking at. So in a very real sense, what you're doing is you're trying to become a metabolic detective, not a dieter. Starting out with plenty of soups, salads, scrambles, shakes, and stir fries, seeing what the results are, seeing how well that keeps schmeck in check, and then adjusting the diet in terms of starch and fat and alcohol and sugar and salt to make your meals fun and doable, but also keep the weight loss results and fat loss results coming. This is the way to do this. Now, of course, over time, some people may need to go back and check their calories as well, because some people can still overeat and go through binge eating behaviors, but this is a much better approach, a more solid approach. It's working from a place of strength versus cutting calories down indiscriminately and chasing hunger and cravings all over the place.
Wow. Mind blowing, you guys. It sounds very simple. Actually, no, it sounds very difficult, but it's actually very simple. Something that I wanted to bring up is, you know, with the keto, which we're going to touch a little bit later in the interview. But, you know, a lot of our keto friends emphasize on the fat. Obviously, healthy fats is what we always encourage people, you know, avocado, olive oil. We all know, right? The healthy fats. And so when you're talking about this approach, you also mention to restrict fats, including healthy fats. Fats usually help with satiety, you know, like you feel fuller or whatever. So why should they reduce the intake of even healthy fats when you are using this approach? And also you said something about, I don't know if I misunderstood, you said if you're going to, when you start with the soups, stews, scrambles, and stir fries, were you saying not to use salt, sugars, alcohols, and all that initially, and then reintroduce them once you've got your hormones in check?
Yep.
Or?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me cover a couple misconceptions first, because it is absolutely wrong to say that fat is the most satiating macronutrient. In fact, it's the least satiating, but I'll explain why it's still good to have fat. So fat, when you look at the research, okay, evidence-based, we're not talking about blogs and gurus and books now. We're just talking about what the actual science says. What it says is that protein is most satiating. So a chicken breast will blow an avocado away in terms of satiation, according to the research. Okay.
Absolutely.
And we also know that even carbohydrates, especially fiber-rich carbohydrates, will also beat fat in satiation when fat and carbohydrate and protein are eaten alone. In other words, if you take a group of people in a study and you give them a chicken breast, a piece of toast, and some butter or coconut oil, all equal calories, okay, 100 grams of lean protein, 100 grams of carbohydrate, and 100 grams of fat, and that's the only foods they get, protein comes out on top in terms of hunger and satiation, carbs next, fat last. This is absolutely understood in the research. There's no debate about this, which is funny because individuals in the health space, and especially bloggers and stuff like that, get this wrong all the time. Now, however, when you combine fat with protein, it is highly satiating, perhaps the most satiating of anything. So fat and protein together blows protein away, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is when you're talking about a keto diet, it takes some time to get into ketosis. But once you do, those ketones, which aren't fat, by the way, they're made from fat, those ketones will also suppress appetite similar to protein, okay? Mm. So that's the first point, is that what we really want is protein is the major satiating nutrient. And obviously, protein, pound for pound or gram for gram, is going to satiate and be more thermogenic and have less calories typically than fat or carbs. And so when I say start with a low carb, low fat base of soups, salads, scrambles, and shakes, it's not to say carbs or even fat are bad, neither are bad. It's simply so that each individual can determine whether or not their body needs fat or whether their body needs a little bit more carbohydrate so that they can play metabolic detective. In other words, one person who does keto is going to do fantastic, is going to feel satiated, is going to lose fat, is going to feel great. Another person does keto, is not satiated, tends to continue to overeat and does not lose fat. And we don't typically appreciate this. One woman is different than the next woman. And so in order to account for this individual variation in responses to things like protein, carbs, and fat, the best approach is to start with the lowest calorie, most satiating food combinations. Those are going to be foods rich in protein, fiber, and water, soups, salads, scrambles, and shakes. Then, based on your tolerance, and some of you listening might know already, oh, Jade, I'm a fat girl, or I like fat, or I'm a carb girl, I like carbs. Then you can begin to bring those nutrients in and experiment, right? Adding a little bit more fat to the soup, salad, scrambles, and shakes, or adding a little bit more carb to the soup, salad, scrambles, and shakes. And sooner or later, you get to a nice individualized diet, which is really what we all should be talking about. In my opinion, the worst thing we do in nutrition is teach these one-size-fits-all approaches to diet and exercise. What we need to be doing is individualizing these approaches. The keto diet is a wonderful, wonderful approach. It's one of my favorites. It works really well for a lot of people, but not everyone. And women, especially compared to men, can do can have a little bit more difficult time with keto, especially at certain times of the cycle. And so the approach I'm trying to teach is to essentially say, rather than just assume that this approach is going to work for everyone, why not spend time finding the approach that works for you? And this is the way to do it. Start with soup, salad, scrambles, and shakes rich in protein, fiber, and water, devoid of or very low in carbs and fat. And then, based on the schmeck response that gives you, add in enough, but not too much, of any combination of salt, sugar, starch, and fat, to, and alcohol even, to make those meals enjoyable, doable, and sustainable, so that you don't end up on this 2-week, 3-week keto diet and then end up binging as a result of that later. You want a sustainable approach that can be done over your lifetime, not an approach that will help you lose 15 pounds in 3 months and then gain back 30 pounds as a result of doing it. That is the thing that most of us in this health and fitness game, if we're being honest with ourselves, are doing. And we need to stop it because it's not working effectively. We want effective solutions that work over the long term. So that's what I mean by easy fat loss. Easy, sustainable fat loss does not is not contingent on certain types of one-size-fits-all approaches, but rather is contingent on the individual finding what works for them.
Absolutely. It makes total sense. And, you know, actually, it's something that I've been very curious, and I think you are the right person to ask this. I remember I was reading recently on one of the ketogenic experts, one of their posts, somebody actually, a woman said, I do not recommend the ketogenic diet because I end up with severe thyroid, you know, damage or issues. So I wanted to ask, based on your knowledge, what's your take on that in terms of, you know, like I, for the little bit of that I know about the ketogenic diet, it's not like a, it shouldn't be like a long-term lifestyle. It should be more of like a short-term type of thing. And like you're saying, you know, start adapting your diet to, or adding other foods, you know, not full-blown carbs and all that, because obviously you're going to gain the weight, but, you know, wholesome foods, just have like a variety of foods. Once you reach your goals in terms of metabolism, hormones, and all of that, and weight loss, adjust your diet accordingly. So what's your take on that, thyroid issues with while on the ketogenic diet?
Yeah. Just as people on the ketogenic diet who get great results should not assume it's going to give everyone great results, people who do the keto diet, the ketogenic diet, and see poor results should not assume everyone's going to get poor results. There's nothing in the ketogenic diet per se that is going to damage the thyroid. As a matter of fact, I've seen people's thyroids function go up and be better restored more times than not with the ketogenic diet. And so this particular individual, without knowing their particular case, I think it is not the right thing to do to take these single case studies and make recommendations off of them. The ketogenic diet, I also agree with you, is not something that is designed, in my opinion, to be done, again, day in and day out, week in and week out, year in and year out. We need to stop thinking about diets this way. The human metabolism does well having these sort of metabolic challenges at times. 3 weeks, maybe 3 months, even the longest I would probably recommend anyone do the ketogenic diet is about 3 months, then come out of it for a little bit. And if you love that lifestyle and you want to make it a lifestyle, then go back into it. But just like the eat less, exercise more approach is probably not the best approach to use all of the time. It can be very beneficial at certain times. Same thing with the keto approach. Ketogenic diet can be very, very beneficial. Now, the other thing that we have to do is we need to talk about semantics too, because most people who think they're doing the ketogenic diet are really not actually in ketosis. They're just doing low, very low carb, high fat diets. To really be doing the ketogenic diet, you need to be measuring ketones, beta hydroxybutyrate in the blood, and maintaining a level of 1 to 3 millimole. And that is what ketosis is. That's the actual ketogenic diet. If you're not measuring that, then you're actually not really on a ketogenic diet. You're just on a very low carb, high fat diet, which may or may not be putting you into ketosis. And the point remains the same, though. Those types of diets should keep Schmeck in check. Stay on them long enough to keep Schmeck in check and create the calorie deficits for sustained fat loss. And then come off of them either, you know, indefinitely or for a short period of time and go back on them. By the way, I talked a little bit about the eat less, exercise less approach. The ketogenic diet is an excellent eat less, exercise less approach for many, many people, not all, and I'm not even going to say most, but many, many people who do the ketogenic diet can easily maintain a calorie deficit and a hormonally balanced system, Schmeck in check, without even trying, because the ketones are keeping their Schmeck in check and driving up fat loss and having other beneficial effects. That's not going to be the case for every single person. And as we know, some people cannot even be adherent to that diet just based on personal preferences. So the fact of the matter is that we are each metabolically unique. So the women listening to this, you are not men, no duh. You shouldn't be treated like men, right? But you're also not, if you're a younger woman, your metabolism isn't the same as a more mature woman. If you're a woman with kids, your metabolism isn't the same as a woman without kids. And so you are uniquely metabolically different, an individual. You also have unique psychological sensitivities in the way you react to stress and emotional challenges and things like that. And you also have unique personal preferences. You should be designing your diet and exercise around those three things: your unique physiology, your unique psychology, and your unique personal preferences. That's what we should be doing. If the keto diet addresses those things, makes you happy, gives you results, keeps Schmeck in check, then absolutely do it. If it doesn't, don't do it. And that's sort of the approach that you should be looking at. Stop being a dieter, become a metabolic detective, and some of this stuff will start making sense to you.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Metabolic detective. That's definitely what you want to start doing from now on. Okay, great. So I was actually reading one of your posts on Facebook, which kind of ties up in what we're talking about. And it said the best way to get in shape is not cardio and it's not weightlifting either. It is both. And the one you focus on changes based on your goals. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, again, this has to be a very individualized approach, right? Because you're going to have people who love cardio and you're going to have people who love weight training. For most people, though, that statement comes from the reality that most people, let's go to, you know, the average, you know, sort of Westerner, right?
Cardio.
Most people want to look good and they want to put minimal effort into exercising to do that. And so the best approach to do that is a mixed metabolic conditioning program that is short and effective. This means combining weight training with cardio in a short workout. So for example, yes, get your heart rate up, right? Get breathless, but you also want to get your body breathing hard, one, getting it burning, two, getting it straining and under heavy weights, and getting it hot and sweaty. I call that the B's and the H's: breathless, burning, heavy, and heat. For most people who are short on time and just want quick, effective results and don't want to spend a whole lot of time in the gym, that can be accomplished by essentially lifting weights faster. I don't mean faster in terms of the cadence in which you lift the weights up and put them down. I mean the rest between exercises. So if you take four different weight training movements and you do one right after the other, you automatically get a cardio response. You will feel breathless. Your body will get burning. You'll feel the strain effect and you'll get hot and sweaty. And this is a far more efficient way to do things. Now, of course, if you're someone who loves cardio, you can do that separately and you can do that if you want, but you're going to get better results if you combine it with weight training. Likewise, if you're someone who loves to weight train and never do cardio, you can do that. It's going to be beneficial, but you'll also get a little bit better results if you combine cardio with it. So all I'm essentially saying is that for most people, you need to do a little bit of both. And in order to really shorten this down and make it most efficient, You really want to get breathless, burning, heavy, and heat. And that's easily accomplished by just doing weight training and shortening the rest periods between exercises. You'll feel like you're running, and you'll feel like you're lifting, and you won't have to spend 2 hours in the gym.
Oh, I like that. I think I saw that in one of your posts, and I took my notes, and I was like, I think I'm going to do this. But somehow, thanks for the reminder. So I know that you are always talking about individualized everything, and I love that about you. But I just wanted to say, for example, if for our listeners, women, which, you know, a lot of my followers are fall into that category, 40 plus, children, sometimes overweight, you know, maybe 10, 15 to 30 pounds, whatever. Would that approach work for a woman around this age with, you know, based on everything we just mentioned, just weight training, faster reps, or I'm sorry, what did you say? Rest less and heavier weights, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, shorter rest periods
mm-hmm. and heavier. Would that work for someone within that, you know, category?
It certainly will, except for one thing that most women need to sort of understand, that exercise is not very great at helping people lose fat in general. The research shows that it is really not exercise that drives weight loss and fat loss. It's really mm-hmm. diet. But the exercise makes sure that the weight you lose is fat and also helps you maintain that longer and also gives you the look that you want. You know, no one wants to be, you know, go from a, you know, sort of pear-shaped person who's overweight to a smaller pear-shaped who's a little bit more flabbier. What we want is to go from a pear shape to a tight, lean hourglass shape. Weight training and exercise helps you do that, but it's not going to do that without diet. Diet comes first. It is most critical. And then comes the resistance training. And I'll say one thing about, I'm sure some of the perimenopausal and menopausal women are wanting to hear a little bit how they should alter the cycling approach. The cycling approach works great for any woman. You don't have to be menstruating to follow the cycling approach. However, most women who get into perimenopause and menopause, what is happening is first progesterone goes away, making these women a little more stress reactive, meaning that overeating or undereating become a little bit more of an issue, and undereating or overexercising or underexercising become a little bit more of an issue. And then at menopause, they lose estrogen as well. And now you lose the other major, you know, sort of stress and food fighter. And so what happens is most women at menopause continue doing the wrong thing. They try to double down on eat less, exercise more, which they should mainly be doing is doing eat less, exercise less, moving more towards more stress reducing, lots and lots of walking, and really controlling their diet. And then every once in a while, bumping up to more eat more, exercise more, and really avoiding the eat less, exercise more, or the eat more, exercise less state. So as you hit perimenopause and menopause, you want to spend more time in eat less, exercise less, much less time in eat less, exercise more, or eat more, exercise less. So what happens is don't be the couch potato, but also don't be the over-exerciser and under-eater. Either be the Parisian, lots and lots and lots of walking with sparing food intake, or the athlete, lots and lots of exercise with more food intake. But I would say the big shift that menopausal and perimenopausal women want to make is that for them, under-eating and over-exercising can actually work against them more so than a younger female. And so they really need to master the eat less, exercise less approach. And by the way, eat less, exercise less does not mean don't exercise. It just means go from 7 days a week of exercising to just three, make up the difference with a ton of walking every day, and really get your calories and carbs and things like that to a low level that keeps schmeck in check and drives fat loss. That's what you want to be thinking about. But unfortunately, most women at this age double down on an ineffective model, the same thing that didn't work in the first place, which is the eat less, exercise more approach. And it's not going to work for them as effectively, if at all.
Hmm. Yeah, that's excellent. What I when you say a ton of walking, what exactly are you referring to? Just to kind of like clarify that for our listeners, in case, because I know there's going to be questions about that.
What the research says is that we really need to be looking at exercise and movement as two separate things. In research, they have something they call non-exercise activity thermogenesis, which is just a fancy word for activities of daily living. Basically, walking, doing the laundry, gardening, sex, taking the stairs, parking further away, all these things. These activities of daily living accumulate an awful big calorie burn. And what they've looked at is if you take someone who sits in a cubicle all day and then goes and does a 30-minute or hour-long workout, but doesn't move all day, versus a woman who moves all day but doesn't go and exercise, the woman who moves all day but doesn't exercise is going to fare better health-wise and weight loss wise than the woman who sits in a cubicle all day and then goes and works out. So what I mean is, in the eat less, exercise less approach, it's a movement based approach, not an exercise based approach, which means if you have a step counter, you want to start shooting for maybe 10 to 15,000 steps daily accumulated throughout the day, versus thinking you're going to over and out exercise this. And the reason why this works is because walking is the only form of movement one of the only forms of movement that simultaneously sensitizes the body to insulin, reduces cortisol, and balances brain chemistry in a way that tends to keep schmeck in check. It's also, for most people, incompatible with eating. So when you're walking, you're typically not going to be eating along with that. And it's a far better approach for someone with a metabolism that doesn't have the same kind of hormonal balancing effects that it did when it was younger. And unfortunately, I'll tell you this, but I'll also say that most women are resistant to doing this because they've kind of been brainwashed the other way around, where it's just like exercise like crazy and eat like a bird. And yeah, most are going to fare very poorly with that protocol. So what I'm saying is walk like crazy, or not like crazy, but walk a whole lot. Exercise only just enough, usually 3 times per week of sort of a mixed metabolic conditioning, weights and cardio type of workout, lots of walking, and a very sensible, healthy, low calorie diet is going to be what drives the results.
Beautiful. I also wanted to mention that Dr. Sadison, one of the posts that was tied up to this conversation, you mentioned which is what I started doing. You suggested take a class, one of those, low impact classes, yoga, and walk outdoors. We all know that when you walk outdoors in nature, it's completely different than just being on a treadmill, And so definitely mix it up, right? Because I was doing that and I actually gained more weight. I was doing the opposite. I was working out 4 or 5 times a week, like I mentioned before, just a lot of hardcore, cardio and weight training and heavy and just for long periods of times. And I saw that it didn't work out. Yeah, it's anecdotal, but Dr. Tata has the data to back it up, guys. So definitely.
Well, what's interesting about that, Astrid, is actually there's a recent study on menopausal women that looked at this in the last 3 years or so. And what it showed is that exercise, what they did is they took a group of menopausal women, they put them on a diet, and it was mainly exercise. And what they looked at is what were the responses. And about a third of those women ended up losing a little bit of weight. Another third ended up not having much change at all from the exercise. And then just over a quarter of those women and actually ended up getting fatter as a result of the exercise. Now, this blows some people away, but why would that be? Because, and it's not everybody. That's what I'm saying. So you have to be careful. This is based on the individual. So about a quarter of these women actually responded to those exercise sessions with increased hunger. And in fact, they ended up eating more as a result of exercise, enough to overtake the amount of calories they burned during exercise. Mm-hmm. So imagine that the exercise session, they would have been better off not doing it at all, because the exercise session elevated hunger to such an extent that not only did they eat enough to overcome the calories burned with exercise, but they actually ended up eating more, overcompensating to actually increase calories and gain weight as a result of the exercise. this is why for these people, and you know who you are if you're listening to this, maybe you're having an aha moment right now. Mm-hmm. If you're one of these people, then this is why the Eat Less, Exercise Less program is much more effective for you. Move more, exercise only just enough. 1 to 3 sessions should be just fine. And then really focus on managing your calories and you will finally start to see the results. What if, here's something for everyone to think about. What if your binge eating and overeating behavior is a result of your over-exercising behavior? For many of you, that's actually the case. Not all, not even most, but for many of you, that's the reason why you're overeating in the first place.
Wow. It totally makes sense. And also, I just wanted you to throw it in there, and it is kind of like anecdotal, but it threw off my sleep as well. I don't know if you could say something about that, but I was like, I was also working out at night, like after 8. So I was like, I've been a night owl for a long, long time. That's something that I've been working on, and it's actually working. I've been going to sleep at 11 every time, around 11 every night. But it threw my sleep completely. I was like 3 o'clock at night working. I'm like wide awake and working on all the projects, mm-hmm. and I have all this energy, and obviously my cortisol levels were going up at night. And so I had to like work on all that circadian rhythms and all of that good stuff. So, right.
Yep, absolutely. Think about it this way. If you're kind of sitting here thinking, oh my God, like, you know, this is making some sense. How do I know, Jade, if I'm over-exercising? Just look at it this way. If on the days you're exercising or the weeks you're exercising, Schmeck goes out of check, sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings, any or all of those, then try exercising less and see if Schmeck gets back in check. If it doesn't, exercise even less until Schmeck gets in check, and then stay right there. Instead of trying to guess at this and, you know, using, like you said, we have to be intellectually honest, both as practitioners when we bring information to people, but more importantly with ourselves. We can't do what we did when we were younger because our metabolism has changed. We can't do what men do because if you're a woman, why should you be doing that? You can't be doing what your friend does because he or she is different than you. You have to do what works for you. That means figuring that out. And by the way, your metabolism could care less whether that's convenient or confusing or doesn't work with your timetables. It simply is what has to be done. And it doesn't care if it's inconvenient for you. And I know that's frustrating, but this is the approach that works. And this is a process that will pay dividends if you just work the process.
That's fantastic. Yep, that's the way it goes. And so, well, guys, this concludes our podcast for today. Is there anything else you wanted to add, Dr. Tita, before we conclude the podcast?
No, I just think I'll give everyone a rundown real quick to help them with sort of what we talked about. Remember, the metabolism is a stress barometer. One way to deal with that is don't do the same thing day in and day out. Don't do eat less, exercise more forever. Don't do keto forever. Change your approach. Adjust it. If you're a young woman, you can cycle the approach. If you're an older, more mature woman, you still want to cycle, but you want to stick with the eat less, exercise less type of approach. You want to manage Schmeck, sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings. You do that by eating mostly soups, salads, scrambles, shakes, and stir fries, and then adding in enough but not too much of fat, sugar, salt, alcohol, and starch. And then you can see whether you're getting results or not. And if you are, that means you're achieving a sustainable calorie deficit. This is just your introduction to this new way of thinking. Now it's time for you to begin to put it into action and to become a detective rather than a dieter. And I think that's going to give you a really nice new way of looking at this so you can finally start getting results from your physiology.
Beautiful. Yeah, totally makes sense, guys. Follow his advice. He is Ed. Believe me, there's a reason why he's on this podcast. You know that I bring nothing but don't forget to visit Dr. Tita's website and also follow him on his social media platforms so you can learn a whole lot more and connect with him. His website is www.jadetita.com. That is J-A-D-E-T-A. drjta.com. You could follow him on Facebook under the same name, Dr. J Tata, on Instagram, Jade Tata. And he also has recently released two of his new books available on Amazon. I'm going to put links in the show notes for you to get the books. You have to. They're a must. I'm getting myself a copy soon. That one of the books is Next Level Tribe and Human 365 Must Reads. Well, guys, thanks so much for listening, hanging out with Dr. Tata and I. Please feel free to visit his website to, like I said, learn more about metabolism, mindset, fitness, self-development, and much more. Jade, it was a pleasure having you. I hope I could have you again real soon. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much, my friend. Thank you for your work. And thanks to all the listeners. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you too. It was wonderful. Have a great day.
You too. Goodbye. Bye.